Good morning, Tucson, Arizona. Welcome to Jump in Tucson. I am your host, Grant Kruger. Very excited to be with you here this Wednesday morning, November 6th. What a wild and crazy night last night in America, the state of Arizona, Tucson, and quite frankly, in the restaurant business in general. I have spent pretty much every election night of my adult life in a restaurant. And it's kind of a weird situation that maybe most people don't get to experience. But in the restaurant world, we generally don't talk religion or politics for a whole lot of reasons, right? We've got a lot of screens these days as TVs have become more ubiquitous and less expensive. But we generally don't put politics on. We keep sports programming where the fights are a little more friendly and not so nasty, with filled with anger and vitriol. But there are two nights of the year that we generally will sway from sports. One is the Oscars. We try not to put the Oscars on, quite frankly, but it is the Super Bowl for women, and you just can't beat it that Sunday night, and you will end up having to put that on in your establishment. And two is election night. And having watched now four presidential elections out of Union Public House, we just celebrated our 14th year in business just a few days ago. So that gives us four presidential elections, which has given us now two Republican wins and two Democrat wins. I've seen a lot of interesting human behavior on both sides of the aisle. We stay up pretty late. Unions open till 2 o'clock in the morning, normally 7 days a week. And so it gives us the unique opportunity to watch the times that these stations end up calling, who wins and who doesn't win. Now, we've all learned a lot over the last 4 years about how elections are called and when these results come in. And quite frankly, whether Fox News or MSNBC or any station calls a race, it certainly doesn't mean it's over. They're just suggesting that the statistical probability is not there. Last night, we saw Fox News call the race for President Donald Trump at about 11:45 p.m. There was a number of Republican stalwarts hanging around the public house over there and immediately began to celebrate. And you saw other stations not call those results. We watched last night until literally right at last call before CNN would give up its icy grip on that particular election result and give in to that one as well, too, much to the celebrations of the remaining couple of dozen customers who stuck around that late to watch that one. But certainly it creates a lot of animosity in restaurants and bars when you have people watching politics. And so we try to put one side on CNN over here, Fox News over here, and have some sort of equitable distribution. It hasn't been easy for everybody, and hopefully our country will move forward today in a better place. Now, there wasn't all victories on that our side, however. There is a lot of local results here in Pima County and Arizona that have yet to be determined. Live in the KVOI studios this morning, I've got fellow entrepreneur and a steering leader from the Tucson Crime Free Coalition, Josh Jacobson. Good morning, Josh.
Good morning, Grant.
Hey, very excited to have you here this election morning. How did your night go when you woke up this morning?
Well, let's see. So I went to two parties last night. I went to Juan Siscomani's party and Heather Lappin's party, and we're still holding our breath on both of those. So
right.
we're waiting for those results. You know, of course, watching the polls come in, watching the chatter on social media leading up to when President Trump was declared 47, that was nothing less than amazing to see.
Yeah, a pretty wild one to see that one called so early, huh? I mean, I think really most of the country was prepared for a week or two of lawsuits and lawfare and hanging chads and some sorts of arguments about this one. And this was over with quickly.
Mm-hmm. And remember back in 2020 when Fox called it so early?
I do.
And it was like disbelief. It was like, how can this be? And then they had the guy going through the statistics and the probability and you know, this little thing called math that I say sometimes in Pima County we forget about. But it was shocking to us. And so it was interesting. I spent a lot of time yesterday watching all the stations, like you mentioned, MSNBC, CNN, getting everybody's perspective. And it was interesting to see just how the perspective started to change, the pontrification of what happened, how could this have happened, and ultimately landing on, okay, whose fault was this?
Right. And I think a lot of people stayed up last night, Josh, waiting to see that call because of what had happened in 2020, mm-hmm. right? So many people went to bed confidently at 11 or 12 p.m. only to wake up early the next morning and be shocked by the results. And I talked to quite a few customers who hung around the bar last night waiting, and they said, I am not going to bed. I am going to wait and not have a repeat of what happened, and I'm going to sit out there and wait until these results are actually shown to me, that they are tangible and in front of my face before I close my eyes and lay myself down to sleep. And I think they were given that gift last night.
I would say decisively between the Electoral College and the popular vote, this was, like I said, nothing short of just absolutely amazing.
Interesting to see how Arizona was touted as being such an important swing state. And we had so many visits from both, you know, the current president, the current vice president, and of course, you know, the candidates on the Republican side as well, too. There was an outsized appearance of importance for Arizona, and yet it didn't even make a difference. We don't have our results right now in from the state, and it seems like it doesn't even matter, huh?
Yeah, but, you know, I think the interesting thing is, and we'll talk about this when we get into the propositions, is that it's, you know, Arizona is definitely not a one-size-fits-all. Yeah, you know, we have a lot of people that have conservative values, but there's also some thoughts on the other side as well that's sprinkled in there as well. And I think that some of these propositions that passed and didn't pass are very evident of that. I think that things are changing, and it's going to be interesting to see what the conversation is in the future.
Without a doubt, if you look at Arizona, where we've got, you know, legislatively, the Republicans control the House and the Senate here in the state, but we don't have the gubernatorial office, and we don't have the Attorney General, and we don't have the Secretary of State. There's a fair bit of balance in that one as well, too. And while we see potentially this red wave coming in, nationally speaking, that didn't happen in 2022, locally here in Pima County, we might be looking at a blue wave.
And I would say that's par for the course for Pima County. I mean, we know that Pima County is an interesting community. But, you know, back to it is tough, because I think that we are looking at some issues in our recorders and elections department, some things that should be looked into. And if we had some higher up authorities in the state that would be willing to do that, I think it would be well worthwhile, because this just isn't right with the way that this election has been run, this cycle, issues that we saw last cycle. And I actually got into looking into what Florida has done and why they are so efficient, and why, you know, we see what are they, the second, third most populous state in the country, and all of a sudden, boom, there we've got almost instantaneous election results.
Without a doubt.
And it's safe and fair.
We're not even going to get more results from Pima County until they start counting again, I guess, at 10 a.m. this morning when they get back to work. Mm-hmm. We're already over here at work on Jump in Tucson. And when we come back after the break, we're going to talk about the things that we do have results on. Josh and I are going to go down over some of these ballot initiatives that I think we can call over here on our own calling on Jump in Tucson. We're going to talk about some of the races locally and what's coming up next for the residents of Pima County and the citizens of Tucson, Arizona. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Josh Jacobson and Grant Kruger on Jump in Tucson, 10:30 a.m. The Voice, your home for local news and talk. Hey, welcome back to Jump in Tucson on this election, post-election morning over here in sunny Tucson, Arizona, from the KVOI studios. We are in studio with Josh Jacobson from the Tucson Crime Free Coalition. I am your host, Grant Kruger, and we're talking all things election. We're going to dive into some of these ballot initiatives. For those that voted in person yesterday, you got to see the four-page monster that was this ballot with 13 ballot initiatives, right? 11 of them created by our state legislator that referred them to the ballot, and two citizens initiatives. And it looks like 7 of the 11 that our state legislator sent through are not going to go through, and only one of the two citizens initiatives is going to make its way to. First and foremost, let's tear into Proposition 138, the Tipped Worker Protection Act. This one is failing by an absolute massive amount. I mean, it is like 75% to 25%. And while we don't have all the results out there right now, I think we can call this one on the KVOI studios over here that yeah, that it is not happening for the restaurant industry and restaurant business. Now, the restaurant industry, Josh, still had a big win over here because, quite frankly, in August, they were able to take the Raise the Wage AZ ballot initiative and get it kicked off the ballot. That was the one that was going to make minimum wage in the state of Arizona $18 an hour.
Yeah, absolutely. And the listeners need to remember the tipped credit, the minimum wage initiatives, these have been battles that have been fought for years and years now. And by getting the initial attack on the tip credit kicked off of the ballot because they didn't have enough signatures, actually, can we say they possibly even had fraudulent signatures on there?
It would be safe to say that, yes, sir. When you lose over 100,000 signatures on a first glance, something was up there.
Yeah. So this was a really tough sell. And obviously, Grant and I being on the board of the Arizona Restaurant Association, we were deep into this one. And it was hard to message because, number one, I don't think a lot of people even know what the tip credit is.
Correct.
I think that educating people on what that is, that's a little bit difficult. And it's been something that's been in existence for eternity inside of the restaurant business. It is part of the nomenclature of our tipping culture. But the attack on the tip credit is ultimately to get rid of tipping altogether and wind up having a California-style minimum wage, $18, $20 plus per hour, that absolutely is killing small businesses and big businesses over in California. So by having groups of people that were supporting this, like Turning Point, the state legislature, Free Enterprise Club, groups that really understood it, that was extremely helpful, but it was really hard on the messaging to get down to the street level. And I think this is something that we've seen several times, and Grant, you're no stranger to it. I think where we're at is that if we've got a ballot initiative, you need to be able to message it properly within 10 seconds or less to show someone on how it will improve their life if they support it or not.
Without a doubt. And Proposition 138, explaining the tip credit to individuals, explaining how restaurants or businesses need to make up that full Monty minimum wage either way to the servers and so on and so forth, just isn't a 10 or 15 second elevator pitch.
No. And then also the wording that was used on a lot of the golden tickets was just absolutely atrocious, even though this was going to be a positive for the servers in the long run. And we also had seen other states be very successful running campaigns that were server-led, like the one out of Maine, where they were able to defeat this. But this is going to be something that is going to come back to the ballot again and again and again until we are either able to push the authors of this kind of legislation out of the state by preserving something like the tip credit, or they ultimately just steamroll and get what it is that they want. But then the question is it ever enough?
Correct. Well, with that not passing now, we can safely say that minimum wage in the state of Arizona is going to be $14.70 an hour. The server wage in the unincorporated Pima County in the state of Arizona will be $11.70 an hour. However, the city of Tucson, their minimum wage ballot initiative that they passed a couple of years ago will come back into play for the first time in a couple of years, where the minimum wage in the city of Tucson will now be $15 an hour, and that server wage will be $12 an hour. So there's going to be a differential wage between the city of Tucson and unincorporated Pima County pretty much now for eternity, because both of those wages now tick up not by some set even dollar amount, but they're both tied to inflation. So they both should rise at the same rate reciprocally, guaranteeing a delta between those two numbers pretty much in perpetuity or until we vote for something different.
Mm-hmm. And I don't want to make the listeners' heads explode, but folks, we've got the next battle that has already begun. So as Grant mentioned at the beginning of the year, $15 an hour minimum wage inside the city of Tucson, you're probably going to see a 3-4% increase on costs of goods and services inside the city of Tucson limits after the first of the year, which right now we've got 20% of the city of Tucson living in poverty. So that's a chunk. But also remember, and this is the part where I'm just preparing everybody, you know, yesterday was election day, but we've got the next battle that's on the horizon, and that's going to be defeating the Romero tax that is going to the ballot next March. And that is going to be another half of percentage tax, taking our tax rate inside the city of Tucson from 8.7% to 9.2%. And so this is just the PSA keep that on the horizon. We've got to beat that one down.
Without a doubt. Imagine the difference between the city of Tucson and unincorporated Pima County, where they'll have both a differential wage and a substantially differential sales tax as well, too. 50% higher in the city of Tucson.
Yeah.
What are business owners, what are people looking to develop going to do? Are they going to choose to build inside the city and do infill projects? Or are they going to look to the place that the sales tax is literally 50% less and the wage is substantively less as well, too? Mm-hmm. I wonder how that's going to work out, sir.
And big purchases, you know, I mean, my goodness, our friends in the auto industry, when you have the opportunity to buy a vehicle across the city limit line or other big expensive purchases in big box stores, or, you know, if you're thinking about going and buying that special gal a new wedding ring, you might not be looking in the city limits.
Without a doubt. And people forget about how often these sort of taxes and these sort of wages drive people's purchase decisions. So we had another initiative out there that you and I both had a pretty heavy stake in, and that was Proposition 312. For those that are keeping score at home, this was the property tax rebate for non-enforcement of municipal nuisance laws. Truly a mouthful out there, mm-hmm. but kind of an interesting one that's looking like it's going to pass over here.
Yeah, and Tucson Crime Free Coalition, I know, Grant, you personally, we couldn't be any happier, because this is something that, again, we put a lot of time and effort into, and it's something that I think it was easy to message. So if you are a property owner, whether you're a commercial or residential property owner, and you're being affected by nuisance crimes that are going unmitigated, you have the opportunity to put in a simple form to the Arizona Department of Revenue to ask for a credit on your property tax that goes to the specific jurisdiction you're in. It's very simple, it's very straightforward, and it seems quite fair. And I think that's a big part of the reason that the voters got behind it, because it was just such a no-brainer with what we're dealing with in today's climate.
Without a doubt, statewide, I think you can see that people are tired of the lack of reaction to the homeless crisis and the fentanyl crisis that we're having over here. And this is going to put certain municipalities on notice that they better actually do the job that they were hired to do, enforce the laws that are on the books right now today. It is not your choice to decide which of those you selectively enforce. And this is going to put the power back in the hands of the citizens.
Yeah. And I think so. Also, voters also understand that this is not meant to be something that is going to solve the chronically unsheltered or homeless crisis, but it is going to be that catalyst, like you said, Grant, for people to take this seriously and effectively do their jobs, or it's going to hit them in the pocketbook.
Without a doubt. Well, these were some of the only wins I think we got over here locally, because looking down ballot, and we're going to break down some of these coming back after that big break over here, looking down ballot, like, there is quite a few losses, I think, on the business-friendly side of, you know, this ballot over here. It's looking like if these early results hold, there could be nearly an entirely clean sweep here in Pima County. We're going to talk about Propositions 140 and 133 when we come back. These are both some of those electoral changes. And then we're going to go down ballot, break down some of the sheriff races, the Board of Supervisors, some of the row offices out there as well, too. We're hoping to get some more results from Pima County over here. I believe they're going to start counting ballots again when they wake up at 10 a.m. I'm sure it's been a long night for Constance Hargrove and the team over there, but it's no big deal. No one's waiting on these results over here, right, Josh?
That's right. And thank you to the volunteers.
Without a doubt. Thanks to everybody for putting this one together. We're breaking down more election news. It's Josh Jacobson and Grant Kruger. Jump in Tucson. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. We're talking all things local on Jump in Tucson every single weekday, 9 to 10 a.m. on Tuesdays. You've got Ted Maxwell from the SALC in the Engagement Hour. On Wednesdays, you get to deal with me, Grant Kruger. We're talking all things local restaurants and politics and how those things often intersect. On Thursdays, Tom Moulton from the Southern Arizona Attractions Alliance. And of course, bookending your week, Dr. Ed Ackerley on Mondays and Fridays. Jump In Tucson. But this afternoon, or this morning, excuse me, we've got Josh Jacobson from the Tucson Crime Free Coalition, local entrepreneur. He's helping me break down some of these local races over here. And locally, on the ballot initiatives, a lot of money was spent on Proposition 140, the Make Elections Fair Act, right? And this one looks like it's going to go down. It's about a 60% no, 40% yes. And so we are pretty close to being able to call this one effectively over here on the Jump In Studios as well too, huh, Josh?
I think so. So, Grant, explain to that one to us in less than 10 seconds.
It's hard, and that's why I think this one failed, right? That ultimately they were looking to find a way to make partisan or nonpartisan primaries, have more participation of independent voters, but also have a situation where the legislator gets to choose how many candidates are in the general election, and then if they don't choose, the Secretary of State gets to choose, and it can be between 2 and 5 people. A mouthful.
And ranked choice voting.
Yes.
And then how does that work? Right, that's where you go down the rabbit hole.
And oddly enough, or perhaps not oddly enough, the Republican-pushed ballot initiative 133 that was going to codify essentially partisan primaries in some capacity also failed. And so the voters basically told both sides of the equation, left and right of center, don't mess with our election system right now, statewide at least. We're happy with the status quo. We're happy with the way this is going on. Or did they just say, this is so darn complicated, I don't understand it, so no?
I think it was the complicated part. I think that if there was a push to take a smaller bite of this thing and actually make it so it was even across the board for independents to get onto the primary ballot with signatures and anybody could have voted, I think that people could have gotten behind that because we are seeing such a huge chunk of independents across the state. You know, and if it was an easy explanation, I think it was the backside, the details, the ranked choice voting part. I think that's where they really fumbled on this one.
It was an interesting one. For those keeping score at home, Proposition 140 was opposed by pretty much every single incumbent in the state legislature, Republican and Democrat, which is why it was appealing, I think, to a lot of voters, quite frankly, mm-hmm. as well, too. But ultimately, it was a very complicated ballot initiative on a very long ballot that I think a lot of people just had ballot fatigue and just said, I don't understand this, so I'm just going to vote no.
Mm-hmm.
And so ultimately, like, both of those ones go down in flames, and we get to think about now in the future, how do we fix our one election problem that we have in the city of Tucson, right? The ward-only elections, another mouthful, another difficult to explain elevator pitch, but something that everybody should be aware of in the city of Tucson, that of the 6 wards, right, during the primary, only the voters in that primary get to vote for their candidate for city council. But in the general election, right, the entire city gets to vote for all 6 wards. It's very atypical. It's very unusual. There aren't other cities in the state of Arizona doing this kind of elections, and it's something that probably could and should be changed. Do you think there's any chance or way for that to happen in the next year or two?
Well, Grant, I am very hopeful. I think that there's some pretty smart and crafty people that are working on this behind the scenes. But this changing the way that we vote in the city of Tucson is going to be the only way we're going to start getting different people on our city council. And we're actually going to get some sort of diversity of thought rather than the folks that are leading the charge right now behind, frankly, activism type of ideals, rather than focusing on the nuts and bolts and what is needed to run a good jurisdiction. So, you know, this is another situation where it's going to have to be easy to message, but we're also going to need all of the players at the table, which on the last attempt at this, we didn't get all the players at the table. There were, in fact, some people that chose to sit it out at their own peril.
Without a doubt. And I think that that's a sort of veiled commentary about, you know, the Pima County GOP over here, Josh, and, mm-hmm. and where in some cases they've taken differential positions against things that would ultimately have helped out their party or party's ideals. We saw it on the golden ticket on Proposition 138, where they actually put out literature against that one with what I believe were some missteps. And we saw that in Ward Only, too, where there was like quite a bit of infighting about whether that should be supported or not in the party, and not because of the political position about whether or not you should have citywide elections for all six wards, but the genesis of how that was created and who was the chair of the Pima County GOP at that time or not. And I think that ends up at the peril of everybody in the city of Tucson and in unincorporated Pima County as well.
Yeah. You know, so think of it this way. I mean, when you just look at the numbers, when you look at the statistics and the math, with the way that our current voting system is set up in the city of Tucson, I don't think it is statistically possible for a Republican to win any of those wards or the mayor for sure.
Hey, as I've said before on the show, looking at the most recent voter rolls for wards 2 and wards 4, there is a human possibility. Not if the entire city gets to vote for it, there's zero chance.
Right. Under the current system, there's no chance.
Correct.
Changing the charter, there's definitely a chance.
Yep. Well, this is definitely something that we're going to have to look forward to over the next election cycle. It probably wouldn't make a big substantive difference in the city of Tucson until 2027, quite frankly, because only wards 2 and wards 4 are competitive even under this proposed revised system that would make the city just like every other city in the state. So moving on, I want to talk about the Pima County Sheriff's race over here. Tucson Crime Free Coalition has kind of come out and taken a couple strong positions advocating for a county attorney candidate and for a sheriff candidate. Where's Heather Lapp and Chris Nano's race right now?
Well, Heather is, she's made up some ground from the initial dump last night. Right now she's trailing by about 15,000 votes. And to give the listeners the update, from what I understand, we are currently sitting at roughly 105,000 votes left to be counted. 77,000 are from the vote centers and 33,000 are early ballots. So there's still a lot of votes that are outstanding. We know that a lot of them are going to be day of. We know that generally that bodes well for Republicans, but we need these ballots to come in, and we're all just holding our breath waiting to see, because this is really too close to call at this time.
Interesting that, you know, well over 100 million votes can happen for the presidential election, and at 11:45 last night we're calling it, and Pima County still at 9:42 in the morning has not woken up and got to counting votes again yet for us on the elections that are actually the most important in our lives. Like the ones that are going to affect our listeners out here at Jump in Tucson, Josh, their lives are going to be more affected by these races, these county races, than they quite frankly are by the presidential or the Senate races as well. And if you look at the early drop, it looks like this could be a very decisive Democrat victory in Pima County. Currently, all five supervisory districts are leaning left right now, including Steve Christie's district, right? Vanessa Bechtol is up early on Steve.
Yeah, he's slightly down, and I think that he'll make up the ground pretty well with the next drops. You know, there's always cause for concern when we're this close, but Supervisor Christie does represent a statistical a district that he has the statistical advantage, and with the turnout that we saw, I think he's going to be just fine. Chris Ackerley, on the other hand, our treasurer, I'm getting quite concerned about the gap that he has to close on that. And then again, you know, you look at a race like that, and this goes back to what we were talking about with, you know, basically just the city charter, the overwhelming advantage that Democrat voters have in this community. And if we just have down ballot voting and voters that are not doing their research or due diligence on candidates, for instance, Chris Ackerley, who is our current treasurer, who knows everything about the job, who should retain the position based upon his qualifications, he might lose because of down ballot voting.
Without a doubt. He even got the Arizona Daily Star endorsement, which of course came out 2 weeks after the ballots went out, or perhaps only 1 week after the ballots went out, because your recorder kind of sent those a little bit later maybe than they should have. And I think that recorder's race is interesting over here as well too. This shows the absolute floor of what a Republican candidate can do with an R next to their name, but with absolutely no campaigning, no fundraising, no signage, right? And you've got Dominic Campbell Gonzalez over here in that particular race getting about 36% or so of the vote right now. And so that's showing the bottom floor of an R vote in Pima County, that if you just have that next to your name and do nothing, you should get 36%. And it's interesting to see some of the supervisor candidates aren't doing much better than that, even with some fundraising and campaigning.
Yeah, you know, and Grant, that brings up a really interesting point. You know, there's people like Janet Wittenbraker, who has just been an absolute soldier on the campaign trail, getting out there, talking about the message, talking about her side, her perspectives, things that without her in the race, voters in the districts or the city of Tucson where she's run, they wouldn't be exposed to that. So there's almost a case to be made in some races where there is a absolute statistical zero chance that somebody is going to win. It is still that important to have that person out there pushing the message, opening people's eyes. You know, and maybe it's the type of thing where you go, you know what? I don't need to put a bunch of money into this race because I know what the outcome's going to be. My whole goal here is to educate the community and to expose what could be.
An important message here in messaging, indeed, from Josh Jacobson, steering leader of the Tucson Crime Free Coalition. We're going to take a quick break. We've got one more segment coming up. We'll talk that Juan Sisko, Monte Cristo Engel race and other things wrapping up. An election day. Jump in Tucson. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Josh and Grant. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. Thank you so much for spending part of your Wednesday morning with us. On this post-election Wednesday, I've got Josh Jacobson, steering leader from the Tucson Crime Free Coalition, with one more segment here in the KVOI studio. Welcome back, Josh.
Hey, Grant, thanks for having me.
Hey, so tying into this last few minutes here into a race that's important, I think, to both of us over here, Congressional District 6, right? This happens to be the Juan Sisko, Monte Cristo Engel race, a rematch of 2 years ago, a very tight district, an R plus about four district. But at the current vote drop right now, Juan is still trailing this race, right?
He is, and it's really close. This is very reminiscent of 2022. If you remember, it was 6 days, but it felt like 2 weeks to get the results. And both Congressman Siskamani and Miss Engel were both sent to Washington, D.C. because there wasn't a victor. They were both going through orientation. Neither of them knew who was actually won at that point until the results finally dropped and Congressman Siskamani was the victor. And at that point, they went and grabbed Miss Engel and put her on a plane and sent her home. And it seems like we are just that close again. With the ultimate outcome was, as I recall, about a percent difference last time.
How terrible to have gone through the orientation and just have it taken away from you. It sort of reminds me of that Miss Universe contest or whatever it was a couple of years ago, that Miss USA where they gave the wrong crown, right?
Right.
Steve Harvey came through and said, sorry, just kidding, my mistake. But this is life in CD6, right? This is a very purple district. And a lot of people have criticized Juan out there, including the Republican Party, right? Juan got, you know, only 60% of his votes in that Republican primary because he wasn't as right of center as some people would like him to be. But isn't this reflective of his constituency? Like, shouldn't a politician from a very purple district be somewhat bipartisan?
Well, Grant, back to that dang pesky thing we've been talking about today called math and statistics and representing your district. Yes, I mean, Juan is an absolute reflection of the district. He gets people on the far right mad at him, people on the far left mad at him, and then hopefully we're going to see enough people in the middle that are coming out to support him, and he's going to be victorious again. Now, you were at his celebration last night, so was I. I do want to point out there were definitely some of his detractors that were there last night that were big smiles, hands around the shoulders, taking pictures and being happy to be there. So, you know, I think that is important to remember as well, that now that Trump has won the presidency, we need the Senate's looking pretty interesting, but we need these congressional seats. And then the last thing I'll say about this is, this is the reason we need the recorder and the elections offices doing their jobs. So you don't have a situation where Congressman Siskamani and Miss Engel are just in the lurch. It's just crappy.
imagine the stress of just flapping in the wind right now for either candidate, quite frankly. Like to put your heart and your soul and your time and your money and all these things into it and not have these results for potentially weeks is somewhat gut-wrenching. And I truly have sympathy for both candidates for putting it out there like that. And what's going to be obviously a very, very close race. In our last couple minutes over here, let's segue over to the state legislator. How important these state races might be as well, too. The Republicans had a one-seat lead in the House and one-seat lead in the Senate in the state of Arizona, and those may not be likely to be kept either, huh?
Well, that's one of the most important things we should be looking at. But right before we jump into that, there's one more race that I would be remiss not to mention. This is one of the most important races for the Tucson Crime Free Coalition, and that is the Flowing Wells Unified School District Governing Board.
Ah, you are right. I believe I happen to know the candidate that was running for that one over there.
Our very own Kevin Daly. He's one of the steering leaders for the Tucson Crime Free Coalition. He is currently serving on that board. He's when he's reelected, it'll be going into like his 24th year, something like that. Kevin Daly has been giving back to the Flowing Wells area for most of his entire adult life, and we're watching the numbers. We're really proud that he's still in the hunt here, and hopefully the voters are going to do the right thing and get him back on that board. And that's just really a testament to how much Kevin Daly has done for the Flowing Wells area.
Without a doubt, I salute Kevin and yourself, Tucson Crime Free Coalition over here. Win or lose on the candidates that you've selected and supported, the messaging might be the most important part, right? Mm-hmm. Taking a stand, getting up there and saying something, this is not working. Here's what we need to do to fix it. And here are even some possible solutions are what we need to do as a community to move forward in Pima County and the city of Tucson alike.
Yeah, so back to the state legislature. I think that we are all just sitting on the edges of our seat.
Yeah.
And watching this, because this is going to be the battle. I mean, if the complexion of the legislature changes, it's going to greatly affect some of the bills that many of us, including Tucson Crime Free, are looking at running next session.
Right. Our listeners, you need to pay attention to these results coming down in the next couple of days. Somehow we were able to spend our late nights in restaurants. I've spent the last 34 years watching presidential results drop at 11 or 12 midnight or 1 a.m. It's unfortunate that in the state of Arizona, we may end up having to watch our most important races, not in restaurants, but at home a week or 2 weeks later after the fact. And maybe that's one of the biggest things we need to change here in the state so that we're not the laughingstock of the United States, dropping such important results often days or weeks after the fact. A big thank you to Josh Jacobson, Tucson Crime Free Coalition. Thanks for spending part of your morning with us, Josh.
Thank you, Grant. Thank you, listeners.
And thanks for listening to Jump in Tucson, spending part of your Wednesday morning over here with us. It's been a pleasure breaking down some of these election results with you. Don't go anywhere. Dennis Prager coming up after the break, 10:30 a.m. The Voice, your home for local news and talk.